And welcome to the Good Librations podcast. I'm Carla.
And I'm Lauren.
Good Librations is the two of us exploring books and stories and how and why we love them.
And a quick monthly reminder to leave us feedback either via the Kiama Library website or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today's topic is Writers' Festivals. Or Readers' Festivals. Or yeah. Literary Festivals.
I mean, all of the above.
Whatever there.
This was another topic that when I suggested it, you did like a big shrug. But no, I wanted to do it. I wanted to research it because our Friends of the Library organisation did a lovely job of organising one in July.
True.
And then, I mean, you have opinions with a capital O about almost anything, but especially writers' festivals. And that's always fun, right?
Sure. Yeah. Can't wait.
And I just wanted to note to our regular listeners that we've not long posted an introduction episode. So we urge you to listen to it, even if you've been a listener of Good Librations for a while. It's basically like a user guide to the podcast, and it might inspire you to re-listen to some past episodes. On to our first segment, Shelf Absorbed. So I've been reading a lot of fabulous YA fantasy lately.
I honestly feel like there is a lot of fabulous YA coming out at the moment.
Yes.
Like amazing stuff
there's
on the shelf.
There's been so much and yep. I've read a lot. So I picked two to review. I feel like you've ruined this segment for me because there was that one where you did three and I was like, oh, can't you just pick one? And then ever since I've done like at least two. So it was massively hypocritical.
Ah, we're large and contain multitudes.
It's true.
As Whitman says.
It is true. So the reason I picked two was because the authors are friends and they are podcast hosts of Pub Dates, and we can't have an episode without mentioning her name. So I'm reviewing Amy Kaufman's The Heart of the World and Kate Armstrong's Firebirds. So they're both the sequel books in duologies, and I loved both. Both of they just are a masterclass in writing in the way that they really wrapped up everything so beautifully, really satisfying to read because there was no stone left unturned, no bow that was untied, you know. And sort of every character and relationship in it was so developed in such a progressive, beautiful, natural way. So Firebirds continues the story of these four magical girls who are fighting against a patriarchy that has kept them sort of cloistered and controlled. And The Heart of the World continues the story of a sailor girl and a prince slash messenger of the gods attempting to stop a war that will sort of destroy everything they know. And I love them both, as expected.
I think it's really hard not to love anything either of those authors writes.
Right?
Yeah, they're both pretty phenomenal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a safe bet for me.
Yeah. So I have been reading, well, I just finished Neon Gods by Katie Robert. And look.
What was that laugh for?
Because
there was like a pause and a laugh.
Because it's so smutty. It's so smutty. The premise is really cool. It's the 13 Gods of Olympus reimagined as like mafia-esque power players in an urban setting, like a city, right? Mm-hmm. However, I think where the reimagining begins and ends is in like their names, the gods of the gods and the goddesses. Like one review I read said Hades and Persephone could have been Todd and Kathy and the story would have been exactly the same. And I totally agree. Robert is kind of capitalizing on the mythology a little bit and she plays very elastically with it.
Right.
But shit, I whatever, babe, do your thing. Three big cheers. It's spicy and it's super easy to read and it's fine as long as you go in knowing and accepting that great depths willn't be plumbed.
Right.
Now, eat your spicy cake like a good girl and move on.
Sure.
That's all you want of it. It is what you want of it. And then, right. And then you can move on.
So the gods and goddess angle is just like the hook in and then it's just what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's romanticy.
Mm-hmm.
Heavy on the spice.
Right.
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I mean, I finished it. Did I? Yeah, I finished it.
It was fine. It was what it was.
It was what it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. And now on to Shelf Important.
Mm-hmm. So our topic, as we said before, is writers' festivals or readers' festivals or literary festivals. So what are they? Well, they're basically a book lover's delight.
Yeah.
You know? Sydney Writers Festival describes itself as bringing together a broad and engaged community around the sharing of books, writing and ideas. So Sydney Writers Festival, they do a marvellous job of outreach, I think. Like we and many other public libraries in New South Wales and maybe right across Australia, I'm not sure, live stream sessions from that festival over 4 days.
Yep.
And so we do it in Gerringong Library and they're always booked out.
Yep.
Like really well attended. We have little morning teas and lovely other things. So keep an eye out in April and May next year. And these festivals, they're just a celebration of writing and authors and the people that love literature in all its forms. And I love the idea of sort of the promotion of book culture in any way, shape and form, really. Like it's important to me, maybe not to everyone, but it's just, you know, that love for all things literary is always going to appeal to me and people like me.
Yeah, for sure. Anywhere where people gather. Who yeah. also love what you love,
that's
I think,
right.
is pretty magical.
It's a nice thing.
Yeah. So the sessions of writers' festivals usually occur in one of the following forms. An author and a literary moderator of some type in a conversation with a Q&A where possible.
Mm-hmm.
A forum where different authors come together to discuss a particular topic that their expertise lends itself to. A showcase of debut writers all mm-hmm. presenting their works. Or a workshop where an experienced writer teaches a smaller group a certain aspect of the craft.
Mm-hmm.
A dinner where a featured author speaks. A series of readings is administered either by a single author or a group of authors under a theme, usually.
Mm-hmm.
And these all typically involve the sale and signing of the authors in question's work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's a good opportunity for people to sort of meet their authors, I think ultimately. And
for authors to have that, like a wider reach that maybe they wouldn't have had.
Yeah.
So the notion of a community of people coming together to celebrate the written word and the authors that write those words is by no means new. We can look to the high society salons in Europe, starting in the 16th and 17th centuries, as a precursor for the kind of gathering that would become the literary festival. At these events, authors or poets, often women, would perform or read their works and attendees would then discuss the ideas within them. I was thinking as we were writing this, it's so often that we research a certain topic and we realise that it's connected to all the topics we've done before, right?
Yeah. The salons particularly, because it was there was such a forward-thinking cluster of little events that happened around literature. And,
like a real moment
for
in
sure,
time.
Yeah,
for sure,
yeah.
Yeah. We've talked about them in many of our other episodes and those Socratic circles, though they've come up a few times as well. So it's so amazing how everything's sort of connected to everything else, which is beautiful and weird. And we hope that even though the same things that are coming up in our podcast, that you're learning things that are new.
Yeah.
You know, literature is literature, but there are many depths to plumb. And, like, it's, all those connections just...
Unless you're reading Neon Gods.
Yeah. Then there's no depths.
Not a lot of depth.
Oh, dear.
I read that at some of these earlier salons that they would be held in bedrooms where like, one woman would recline on the bed and read aloud or perform. While everyone else kind of sat around and watched. The original work from home Zoom meeting, I guess. Can you imagine that today, though? Just like hanging out in bed and reading your ACOTAR fan fiction to your buddies. Like the literal dream, but whatever.
Literal dream for you, maybe not your buddies.
That's true. But ultimately, these events were small gatherings of friends or particular players of society to listen to one another or to watch a particular author read from their new work. Charles Dickens, for example, was one quite well known for the passionate performances of his own works. And honestly, everything I learn about Dickens makes me want to add him to my, like, if you could have dinner with anyone from history list.
Right.
Because the man was so extra. Like,
totally.
Everything he did with 10,000% effort.
Yes, he's right.
Just unreal.
The first literary festival, certainly in Europe, was most likely the Cheltenham Literature Festival, which began in 1949 and became the longest-running festival of its kind anywhere in the world and is still going today.
Yeah.
Still considered one of, like, the most prestigious literary events in the world.
Sure.
But more broadly, many cultural festivals such as these, as they exist in their current form, arose in the 1980s, ideally to strive towards the democratization of ideas and creativity and in shaping creative communities. They were also a byproduct of a boom in European tourism and a need to posit cities as places of cultural and creative vibrancy. The idea being that the well-educated and wealthy would not just want to visit these cities, but might look to move themselves and their money there permanently too, if they could be seen to be hosting events that supported a particular lifestyle.
Mm-hmm. Bougie.
Yeah.
Yes. Bougie lifestyle.
That's so true. And it's true today too, because many annual festivals have that booming tourism aspect to them.
Well, and I think it's a way for a city to posit itself in a particular way, as you
yeah,
said.
Yeah, sure, like a framing.
They're framing the city as what they want to be. Like, you know, yeah. This is a place of you know, well-read, educated, whatever.
Sure.
However true that is.
Yes, right.
Like, you know, it might absolutely not be, but it's certainly, you know.
That's the market they're aiming for.
Does a job of saying, hey, this is the hat we're wearing, you know.
Come and gentrify us.
Come and gentrify, pretty much, yeah. Pretty much. I was trying to say it without saying it, but yeah sure. That's pretty much it.
So they also blossomed at a time when the literary market was ripe for plucking. The civil rights movement and the rise of feminism had contributed to a publishing industry and academia which were promoting more culturally diverse narratives and contributed to a sense of placemaking and cultural identity, which is, I think, what they're still very good at achieving.
Yeah.
And which is, as Gerath Head, assistant editor at the Griffith Review, says, where writers' festivals do their best work, and he argues is really the only sphere in which they are actually supporting social justice among their communities. Events in smaller communities and outreach events provided by larger festivals, like the live and local events streamed into venues across the state by the Sydney Writers' Festival. That's what we were talking about happening in our library.
Yep.
And the Brisbane Writers' Festival In Your Suburb program, which held free events in community libraries across the inner city. So these have the ability to engage people who might otherwise be isolated by distance or ability or transportation or whatever.
And I honestly think this is where writers' festivals need to be.
Sure.
Doing a bit more work.
Yeah.
Personally.
No, I'm with you. Yeah. I think that aspect of them is, like, since Sydney Writers Festival have started doing that, it opens it up, doesn't it?
So much.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, so much.
There's a lot of sort of elderly people in our community that would not get up to Sydney.
No, that's right.
Not one bit. So they can come here and it's sort of safe and small and accessible. So special. They're an opportunity for creators, too, to come together and form a little citizenry in which writers communicate the often strange and lonesome world in which they live and work.
It's just so true, isn't it?
I know.
You know, yeah. Strange little world that authors live.
I know, I like that. And, you know, we think that that's sort of the point that about literature. We can all understand the human condition, but writers just have this very specific way of examining it and exposing its beating heart to the masses.
Sure.
And these festivals also foster what Giselle Sapiro calls the transfer of symbolic capital between authors and their audience, creating a strange, perhaps performative, alternative reality, almost to the solitary culture of both reading and writing books, like a wild and transient symbiotic daydream we all just share in for a moment.
I think that's true of any kind of festival. Like, if you think about music festivals.
Yeah, sure.
It's this odd moment in time, isn't it? You know, like everyone's gathered there. Everyone, like what you were saying before, everyone loves the same thing.
Yes.
You're around people who love the same thing.
Yeah.
I always kind of feel like that when I go to art galleries. It's like I'm in this space and I'm loving this and I'm feeling these feelings and I'm responding to these artworks.
And you feel connected to the other people that are there.
Yeah, that's right.
That's true.
I think it's true.
I agree with you. I'm with you.
On their website, Somerset Storyfest writes that one of the most important aspects of contribution to community that these festivals achieve is promoting books, reading and writing as a career to young people.
Right.
So this festival does a particularly awesome job in providing opportunities for young people to get involved. And that's, as I said, I would love to see it among more of them, to be honest.
Yeah, sure.
I think festivals, sometimes readers' festivals, writers' festivals, literary festivals.
Yeah.
Literary with a capital L. Sometimes sure. take themselves quite seriously. And it would be great to see kids disrupting that a little bit, sure. I think. You know, Howl at the Moon. Come on. Writing, I think, like, art is a dirty process.
Mm.
It's an ugly process. And I feel like we see this very polished end piece, you know. It's the same with music and it's the same with art. It's we see this very polished end piece, and I think that literary festivals are a part of that polished end piece.
Yeah, you know? Sure. No, I agree. I like all of these things that you're raising too about sort of ways that they could do better. That they...
Well, just different.
Do better in the way that you're broadening it. But sort of offering those aspects of accessibility and offering those opportunities for younger people, like those are ways that we can see change in them and not just stagnation.
Yeah, for sure. And look, one of the criticisms leveled at literary festivals, as well as one of the things that people love about them,
sure.
is their politicisation. So the nature of the arena, panels of authors or commentators or academics debating or sharing their opinions on often challenging subjects, means that there is often scope for combustion and controversy, such as the Lionel Shriver incident in 2016, where she basically said, cultural appropriation isn't a thing, and I wish people's outrage at it would go away. And, like, I'm totally paraphrasing, but ultimately that's what she said.
Right.
So there was quite a bit of controversy.
Sure.
Oddly enough.
I can't imagine why people would find that controversial.
Would take umbrage. Giraffe Head says this politicising of literary festivals is a construct which actually helps them self-sustain.
Mm-hmm.
And Amrita Shah, in an article for Scroll, went even further, accusing festivals of utilising the Roman strategy of bread and circuses, keeping people distracted, fed and entertained as a means to fluff out the economy by appealing to tourists and generate public approval and, look, a bit of community backpatting for cultural do-gooding, you know, which, I don't know, like, I kind of do feel like it's preaching to the choir a bit.
Yeah.
So whilst I appreciate the need and importance of a public forum mm-hmm. in which ideas are Socratically discussed, I wonder what is really being challenged within homogenised audiences.
Sure.
So I don't think it's the fault of the organisers, really. I think festivals are really expensive to run and costs absolutely should be met.
Yeah.
But my concern is how accessible are they, really, to folks outside the same white, wealthy and well-educated demographic, which is absolutely the people that are attending these events, and what's being achieved within the festival bubble that might be of better use in a more diverse setting or with more diverse input, I suppose.
Sure.
And as we discussed last month, white, wealthy and well-educated is still the cultural maypole around which the world is expected to dance, particularly, I think, our culture or our communities here.
Yeah, sure. But as Dr. Millicent Weber, a lecturer in English with the ANU School of Literature, Languages and Linguistics, say that 10 times faster, also points out, contemporarily, these events are no longer cultural silos.
This is true.
Mm. They now exist in both the physical and the digital spaces, and algorithms notwithstanding are far more democratized in terms of reach of the messaging and talking points and controversies that these festivals encourage. So kind of what we were saying before, sure. that is opening up, but maybe should just be kept in mind more.
Perhaps, but also I do think they do a good job in trying.
Sure,
you know, to get authors sort of across to have diverse subjects and authors and whatever. My argument is, it's almost after the fact. So you want diversity to happen after the thing has already been talked about.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it wasn't that long ago that there was a panel in a Readers Festival which was talking about sex work, didn't have a sex worker on the panel.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? So all of the controversy and the discourse that happened about it happened kind of after the fact. So
right. Yeah.
I think that you're having these Readers Festivals, you bring these people on board, and then you have this homogenized audience who are the only people that can afford to be there.
Sure.
And it's like, well, but anything, any kind of discussion that happens about it is not going to be challenged on the day in the room.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of happens after the fact, which I think is still valid.
Sure. Yep. No, I know what you mean.
But do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Yeah. And she also says literary festivals are disproportionately attended by people of privileged backgrounds, which is what you were just saying. Yeah. Generally speaking, their audiences are wealthy, well-educated and white, but she goes on to say, and I think like this is a pertinent point, it's important to recognize that the same can be said of many cultural sites, for example, galleries or museums. This is not a problem that's caused by these cultural sites, but rather one that reflects the fact that we live in an unequal society and that participation in cultural events demands the kinds of cultural and social knowledge afforded to the privileged. Like, that's why the audiences are going to those things, because... Sure. Because that's the cultural precedent of society in general.
The maypole around which we're all dancing.
Yes,
absolutely.
That's right.
I totally agree. Yeah.
So indeed, on the contrary, literary festivals make sustained and concerted efforts to draw attention to and question these problems, like you were saying.
Yeah.
Like they try, and it's a slow process, but it's happening.
Look, I totally agree. It'd be interesting to see the future of festivals and to see how they are kind of challenging that aspect of accessibility. Mm. And also, what's new? Like, what's different about that? The upcoming festivals that someone in the next town hasn't just done?
Yes.
You know, like, I think there was a sort of few month period there where there were three or four festivals within kind of a 2-hour driving.
Yep, that's right.
Distance
yep.
that were very similar to each other.
That's right. Same authors in...
Same authors. And I totally get that because authors are traveling and they need to promote their books and absolutely hard agree.
For sure.
And hard support all that.
Yes.
But what else is being done that makes that festival
different?
A little bit different.
Yeah. That's right. Agreed.
And affordable and appealing and accessible and
Yep.
All
and
of those just things.
Fresh in every way.
Yep.
Before I Just Can't Help Myself, we wanted to do a fast recap of the Kiama Readers Festival in July. So the Friends of Kiama Library organised it, and they did a really wonderful job of bringing together a fabulous range of authors, but in a way that I don't think was too overwhelming or costly for people or demanding of attendees. So sure. I think that was sort of a nice thing. It occurred over 2 days, and it commenced with a delightfully cozy session called Books in the Garden. So they held this in a greenhouse in the local nursery, and the authors present were Fiona Weir from Buena Vista Farm with her book From Scratch.
Yay! Fiona's coming to Kiama?
Yes.
For the NaNoWriMo National Novel Writing Month workshops that we'll be putting on next month. So very excited about that.
Great, very exciting. Also, award-winning horticulturalist Craig Castry from Victoria and Phil Lavers from Moonacres Farm in the Southern Highlands. So this session was all about growing food and being nourished by reading about food and having it in a nursery. Like, what a stroke of genius.
So clever.
So lovely.
So clever.
What a pleasant afternoon that would have been.
Lovely.
You know?
Great idea.
And then the incomparable Fred Smith officially launched the festival at Kiama Library that evening. So Fred is known as the singing diplomat. And I went to it with husband. And I don't get him to a lot of literary events. But this one, which was about war stories and performed mostly via the medium of like live folk music, was perfect.
Yes, that is
perfect.
Made for him.
Made for him. And we had the best time. Like it was so beautifully done. It was really moving. He made us laugh and cry, and just like a real mastery of language and poetry and melody. It was super powerful. Highly recommend his books and also his music. And like, we had such a lovely date night at work.
So nice. The next day, Books by the Sea sessions were held in the pavilion in Kiama with authors Hugh Mackey, Sue Williams, Chris Hammer, Joanna Nell, Michael Brissenden, Karen Viggers, David Hardacker, Andrew Putness, and Sue Turnbull. And to cap it all off, a dinner was held at the Leakes Club with author Jane Caro to speak.
Mm-hmm.
It was all beautifully organised and really enthusiastically attended, and we love to be able to partner with organisations and help different community groups facilitate things in our library and at other locations.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the job that I love too.
Yeah, right.
If you couldn't make it to the Kiama Readers Festival, you can listen to all of the sessions on the Kiama Community Radio website. You can also listen to all of Good Librations episodes on the Kiama Community Radio website, which we will link to on the podcast page of the Kiama Library website. We'll also provide a list of a whole bunch of Australian lit festivals you might like to visit on our website for your perusal. And there are about a billion.
Many, many.
Of them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So thanks for joining us today. Don't forget to follow Kiama Library on social media and check out the podcast page of our website for show notes. And if you have time, rate and review wherever you can.
Our next topic is going to be book travel.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Because our wonderful colleague Lauren has just arrived back from a visit to Hobbiton in New Zealand.
So, so jelly. Like, happy for her.
Totally.
Happy for her. Love that for her. Hate that I didn't go.
Right?
Yes.
The jealousy is strong. I want to be there so badly. So
just like live there forever.
Yes.
Yeah, for real.
I mean, you guys know how I feel about Lord of the Rings.
We know.
Thanks for sticking with us. We'll see you next time.
Bye.